Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Pei Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the top of Daf Pei Beis. It is likely that the end of this shiur, Mirtz Hashem, will continue till the end of Daf Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Perek ends. As you look in the Gemara text, you notice that we've employed a dashed frame around the next several lines. The Gemara does not introduce this section as a Tanaic source, hence we didn't use a regular frame marking. On the other hand, similar to the previous sugya where we featured the 10 tnoim that Yehoshua, the 10 conditions that Yehoshua established upon the entrance to the land, here we have 10 takonas, 10 enactments of Ezra, who also was the leader of the Jewish people at the time of their return in the Second Temple period. The use of the frame is in order to make the list stand apart from the rest of the Gemara, so it will be easier to refer back to it. So, as we indicated, the next section of Gemara, and this is our topic heading as well, will feature the 10 enactments, the 10 takonas of Ezra. After we go through the list, the Gemara will refer to each one of them. We've used a numbering system going down the side of the Gemara text, which will take us till the top of Omid Beis. Following that, interestingly enough, you'll see another list of 10 items, 10 things that were said regarding Yerushalayim. As far as that, we do have a frame around that on Omid Beis because it does come from a Tanaic source. There's at least a reference to it from a Tanaic source. This list might very well also be of Tanaic origin. It simply I don't have a cross reference to such a point. Now the list. Asora Takonas Tikein Ezra. There are 10 Takonas enactments that Ezra established. Number 1, Shikurin B'Mincha B'Shabbos. That there shall be a Torah reading at Mincha. Mincha is in the afternoon hours of Shabbos. V'Kurin B'Sheni U'B'Chamishi. And that there shall be a Torah reading on Mondays and Thursdays. V'Donin B'Sheni U'B'Chamishi. And that courts shall sit in session on Mondays and Thursdays. Umechabsim b'chamishi b'shabbos, and clothing washing shall take place on Thursdays in honor of the oncoming Shabbos. Ve'oichlin shum b'erev Shabbos, the practice of men eating garlic on Friday nights. V'shitehei isha mashkemes v'oifa, and that a woman, when she bakes, she shall bake early in the day, so that bread is available to any poor man that comes knocking at the door. Number 7, Vishite Isha Chigeres B'Sinor. Rashi on this says, Sinor Dugmas Michnosayim Tanim. It seems to be some type of undergarment that resembles short pants. The woman is to wear this as a garment, we'll say, of modesty. Number 8, Vishtei Isha, of course it's an under type garment, let's not make any mistake about that. And number 8, Vishtei Isha Choyfefes V'Toyveles. A woman, prior to her ritual immersion in the mikveh, she shall, Choyfefes, it has to do with tending to her hair. Rashi says, Choyfefes, generally speaking, is what we would call today shampooing. It's a washing of the hair, but Rashi adds, with a comb, and then tovelas, and then immerse in the mikveh because the comb will clear out any knots that might have formed in her hair, and knotted hair represents a chatzitz, an interposition, when immersing in the mikveh. Number 9, v'shiyu roichlin mafzirin bayoros. Roichlin, Rashi describes as mevim besomim lenoshim liskashit bohem. Besomim are what we would probably call perfumes for women as part of their liskashit, has to do with beautification. In the realm of kishut, you'll also find jewelry. But here we're speaking about perfume salesmen shall circulate from one community to another and sell their merchandise. And Rashi adds a very significant point of what was part of Ezra's enactment is that the local townsfolk who also sell similar items shall not protest these outsiders from coming in and marketing their merchandise. Generally speaking, if there is a business establishment, a local business establishment, they have the right to protest outsiders from coming into town to interfere with their livelihood. The Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra, in the second parak of Bava Basra, deals with that issue more extensively. In this particular case, though, Ezra enacted that local townsfolk shall not be able to object to these outside merchants marketing their perfumes. And number 10, V'tikein tvila labali kerion. A bal keri is a man that experienced a seminal emission. And before the study of Torah, so Ezra established that a man shall immerse himself if he had experienced that emission. The Gemara now goes over the 10 that we listed. So we go over Shiyu Kurin B'mincha B'Shabbos. The enactment here is a specific enactment for a Mincha Torah reading on Shabbos afternoon. Why was that enacted? So when we look at the Rashi, we'll discover that this is coming on the heels of the enactment of reading on Mondays and Thursdays. So it says Mishum Yoishvei Kronos. Rashi says Mishum Yoishvei Kronos. What are Yoishvei Kronos? Literally, people that sit in the corners. But as many times we've said, many, many times through Gemara markings, Daf Yomi, Shiurim, that literal translations are very often, in the best case scenario, meaningless. In the worst case scenario, they're misleading. So what does Yoshvei Kronos mean? So Rashi says, Yoshvei Chanuyos Koyomai Sachoyol. People that sit in stores. In other words, they're merchants that tend to their stores. My theory is, you find this in other Gemaras, that stores were located at corners where you would go. You were traveling on one street, you would turn into another street, and right away there would be a store. But that's merely my own theory. Nevertheless, it's a reference here to store owners that during the weekdays, oiskin b'scher v'ein kurin b'sheni u'v'chamishi, they did not attend the synagogue for the Monday and Thursday Torah readings, so that tikkun b'gunayu. So if for them this Torah reading was established, kriya yaser, an extra Torah reading beyond the Shabbos daytime or morning Torah reading, an extra Torah reading was established with them in mind, in honor of them or for them, so that when you look at the list, you see that in the first, number one is Kurin B'Mincha B'Shabbos, number two is Kurin B'Sheni V'Chamishi, but in chronological sequence it would seem that the Sheni V'Chamishi Torah reading was first enacted, and seeing that the merchants weren't able to participate in them, so Ezra then established this additional Torah reading on Shabbos afternoon. Let's continue in the Gemara of Shukurin B'Sheni U'B'Chamishi. The Gemara asks, Ezra Tikkun. Is that something that Ezra enacted? He established that Bomei Korah Miskinet. This was an ancient, much older, many, many years before Ezra, Desanya. And here we have a Tanaic source in which we will see that the Torah reading on Mondays and Thursdays has a much more ancient origin than Ezra. Ezra was at the beginning of the Second Temple period. It's now, the source says, Desanya, Vayechu Shloishes Yome Bamidbar V'loi Motsu Mayim. The Jews were traveling 3 days in the desert during the exodus from Egypt, and they did not find water. Dershei Rishumos Amru. Dershei Rishumos are those that were engaged in explaining, expounding upon verses, oftentimes in a nature that's beyond the simple reading of the words. So they explained Ein Mayim Ela Torah. The pasuk that says they didn't find water, it means they didn't have any Torah. Shenemar Hoy Kol Tzomei L'chu L'mayim. The pasuk in Yeshaya that says let all the thirsty go to the water is really a reference to go to study Torah. Kevan Shalchu Shloishes Mayim Belo Torah Miad Nilu. Once they were traveling 3 days in the desert, they immediately became. The word Nilu is translated as fatigued, but I believe that the word indicates becoming wayward. In other Gemaras, you see the word Nilu having to do with becoming foolish. There's a pasuk that refers to the Sorei Tzoyan, that you find a verb form very similar to this. And you also find Asher No'alnu V'Asher Chotonu. So the scenario being described here of walking 3 days without Torah leads to an undesirable situation. So Umdu Nevi'im Shebeinayim V'Tiknu, the prophets amongst them. Now that would indicate you're talking about a period of time during the Exodus from Mitzrayim. So the prophets amongst them arose and established V'Tiknu Lohem Shiukurin B'Shabbos. There should be a Torah reading on Shabbos day. Umafsikin Be'echad B'Shabbos, and then a break, a pause of 1 day on Sunday, no Torah reading. V'Kurin B'Sheni. And then on Monday, yes, a Torah reading. Umafsikin b'shlishi urvi. And then a break on Tuesday and Wednesday. V'kurin b'chamishi. And another Torah reading on Thursday. Umafsikin erev Shabbos. And then a break on Friday. If you are following the progression of days, you'll notice there was not a continuum of any 3 days without Torah reading. Kedei shelo yalinu shloshi yomim below Torah, so that they should not they shouldn't experience. Yalinu literally means they shouldn't sleep 3 days without Torah, but it's a reference to there shouldn't be 3 successive days without Torah. So we see from here, not like was suggested before, that Ezra established the Monday and Thursday Torah reading, but rather it's a much older Torah. It's a much older enactment. The Gemara answers: Meikora Tiknu Chad Gavra Tlosav Suki. The original Takona that we referred to in this Tanaic source of Monday and Thursday was a Takona where one man would read 3 psukim. Inami Tlosa Gavri, Tlosa Psuki, Keneged Kehanim, Levim, Misraelim. Alternatively, 3 people would read from the Torah, a total of 3 psukim in honor of the 3 levels, the 3 groups within the nation of Israel, the Kehanim, the Levim, and the Yisraelim. Also, who Ezra came along, Tikein Tlosa Gavri, Vasara Psuki. Ezra expanded the practice on Mondays and Thursdays into, instead of 3 psukim being read, he established 3 people are called up for a total of 10 verses. The 10, what's the significance of the 10? Keneged Asora Batlonim. It seems to me that he's preserving the element of 3 in the sense that 3 people are called up, but he expanded the number of psukim read 10 in honor of the 10 batlonim. What are the 10 batlonim? The Rashi explains Asura Batlonim. The word Batlonim has a negative connotation to it. So what is he doing establishing in honor of Batlonim? Batlonim, Botel, means someone who is inactive. Someone who is unemployed, we'll say, who has nothing to do. So here, though, it has a positive connotation because it's, as Rashi says, "Bnei Adam Ksherim B'Teilim Mimalachton La'asuk B'Tzorchei Tzibor." These are, and you can see Rashi uses the word Ksherim. I'm fairly certain, in anticipation of what we mentioned before, the general negative connotation of the word Batlonim. So Rashi says these are 10 Chosher, 10 proper, upstanding individuals that opted to disengage from any common daily work in order to dedicate themselves to public needs, and included in the public needs, v'lavoy kaidmin lebeis haknesses, and they would arise early to the synagogues, kadeshu mitzuyin asor le'esat fila, so that there would always be 10 people when prayer time came. The Gemara in Maseches Brochus, if I'm not mistaken, makes reference to a situation where the Almighty, so to speak, the Divine Presence, comes to a synagogue and doesn't find 10 people there and gets very upset. So in reaction or in response to such a potential phenomenon, some communities had 10 batlonim that were always there before the prayer time arrived, and hence stopping, preventing the negative scenario described in the Maseches Brochus. And Umisparnas and Michel Tzibor, interestingly enough, these people were to be supported by the public. If they forfeited their option of having gainful employment in favor of benefiting the public, so it's only right that the public should support them. We turn back to the Gemara. V'donin b'sheni u'b'chamishi. He established that court shall sit in session on Mondays and Thursdays. What's significant about Mondays and Thursdays? The shichi, the osu lemikra b'sifra. People were assembling anyway to participate in the Torah reading, so that if people had court cases, it was convenient for them on the days that they were coming anyway for the Torah reading, the courts would be available for them. The Tosfos in the lower part of the page raises an issue. The donin b'sheni u'b'chamishi. The toimar, you might ask, v'alo kedem takonas Ezra, how you based in kvuin b'chol yom, k'domar b'ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis indicates that courts sat in session every day. So, imkein matikein Ezra, what did Ezra establish? V'chitikein shelo yu kvuin elo b'sheni u'b'chamishi. Are you to think that he established that they should not sit every day in session, but only on Mondays and Thursdays? That doesn't sound reasonable. The Omer Ri, or Rabbeinu Tam, Shelo Hoyu Kfuyun Tchila B'chol Yom Elo Birachas. What the Gemara in Ksubas describes is they sat in session every day, but that was only in one community. V'tikin B'chol Ir V'ir B'sheni V'chamishi. He established that every community should have at least Mondays and Thursdays for the courts sitting in session. The Gemara continues. V'shum mechamsin b'chamishi b'shabbos. Why? Mishum kavod Shabbos. The washing of clothing on Thursday was to honor the Shabbos with the freshly washed garments. V'shu oichlin shum b'erev Shabbos. That there should be the consumption of shum is often translated as garlic. On Erev Shabbos, on Fridays or Friday nights, mishum oina. Ona has to do with a man's obligation to have intimacy with his wife. The nature of shum, of garlic, is that it increased the male seed production, and hence the timing of it, of that increased seed production, for in anticipation of the intimacy that men and their wives would have Friday nights. Dichtiv, the pasuk that the Gemara now cites, has to do with this idea, this practice, of Friday night intimacy. Asher Pirio Yite Beito, the pasuk describes the bringing forth of fruits in their right time, and we're talking now in the context of fruits of mankind, meaning procreation. V'yom Rav Yudah, V'itamer of Nachman, V'itamer of Kana, V'itamer of Yochanan. We have a string of four names. Who is the author of this? This pasuk that said, "Asher Yipuri Yitein Beito Zeh Mishamish Mitoso Me'erev Shabbos L'Erev Shabbos." He who conducts intimacy on from Friday to Friday, once a week on Fridays, Friday night. You see, there's a reference to the Gemara in Ksubis, Daf Samach Beis, which elaborates on the issue of time expectations, time gaps in time for different kinds of people with their wives. Tonu Rabbanan, Chamisha Dvaram Nemru Bishum. Five attributes have been attributed to garlic. Masbia, it satisfies. Umashkin, it increases warmth, the body warmth. Umatzil ponim, it creates a radiance, a facial radiance. Umarbe hazera, that was the point we just described, the increase of male seed. Vahoyreg kinim shebivne me'ayim, and if a person suffers from intestinal kinim, often translated as lice, whether it's lice as we know it or some other type of worm-like creature in one's intestines, so be it. We've often emphasized it in Gemara markings. We don't commit ourselves to literal translation of plant and animal life. But whatever the case is, the shum is capable of warding off, of killing those undesirable intestinal varmints. V'yeshomrim machnis avo umoitzi es hakino, and others add that the shum has the capacity of increasing love and causing the exit of jealousy. V'shtei isha mashkemes v'oifa. The emphasis here is when she bakes, she should bake early in the day. Kidei shetei pas mitzuyel aniyim, so that bread is available for the poor. The poor might circulate in seeking sustenance early in the day. So the woman, by completing her baking early enough, her freshly baked bread will be available also to the poor. V'shtei isha chigeres besinor. We mentioned before this is some type of undergarment that resembles a short pants. Mishum tsniusa. It had the effect of modesty. And Rashi says, lesrachik minu avera, just to make any potential forbidden intimacy just a little bit harder, being that she's wearing this special undergarment. V'shtei isha chayfefes v'teveles. That was one of the takonas, the eighth takona, is that a woman, in anticipation of her ritual immersion in the mikveh for purification, would make sure that there's no chatzitza, no interposition in her hair. So the Gemara asks, do you need Ezra to establish that? D'oraisahi, this is a Torah level consideration, namely that a woman prior to immersion in the mikveh must be interposition free. And the Sanya, the pasuk says, "Varochatz es besora b'mayim." The pasuk is a reference to immersion in the mikveh. Shelo yehe dover choytzeitz bein besor lamayim. There shall be nothing separating one's flesh and the water. Es besoro, in the pasuk we read, you see the word es besoro, that's es atofel besoro. The word es comes to include that which is subsidiary to one's flesh. Umayniu, and what is called subsidiary to one's flesh? Sayar, hair. So from the pasuk, we see that there shall be no chatzitza in the hair. So Ezra isn't really establishing anything that we don't already know from the Torah itself. The Gemara answers, Amri, Doiraisa, as far as the Torah level expectation, Liyuni, all that's needed is to look, have someone look into one's hair. Dilma Miktar, maybe a knot has formed. Inami, Mous Midi, Mishum Chatzitza, maybe there is something, some dirt. Mous is literally something disgusting or dirty, filth. There might be filth. So that's what is required on a Torah level, liuni. Liuni means to look, to investigate, to make sure that there's no knotting or there's no filth. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. So Ehu, Ezra came along, tikein chafifa. He established that there must be a combing of the hair. And Rashi says, laharchoka de milsa, for extra precaution. In other words, not relying just on the visual survey of the hair, but an actual combing to serve as an additional precaution. Number 9, Vishu Roichlin Machazrin Bayoros, the enactment that the merchants, the perfume merchants, shall circulate in different communities, Mishum Tachshite Noshim Kadeshalo Yizganu Al Balehem. The sales of perfumes was part of the realm of Tachshite Noshim, the adornment, the beautification of women, so that they shall not be undesirable to their husbands. The Gemara was very concerned. I say the Gemara is found. I mean, it's found in the Gemara, but it goes back to Ezra's time, and certainly earlier. But Ezra made formal enactments. The concern that men should find their own wives. I emphasize their own wives attractive, and of course that will strengthen their marital bond and not have men gaze upon other women. And that there's more on that topic, I believe you can see also toward the end of Maseches Tainis. Fatikein Tevila Labale Keryon. He established immersion in mikvahs for people for men that experienced the seminal emission. Truth is that the concept of balkeri and defilement can be extended even beyond what I just said. But we're not here to analyze that topic. However, the issue here is we're given the impression that Ezra established immersion for someone who is defiled, like a balkeri type of defilement, but doraisahu, the Torah orders that. The Torah indicates that a person who is a balkeri immerses himself in a mikveh dichti, v'ish ki seitzei mimenu shichva zera, v'rochatz b'mayim es besoro. It says already in the Torah that a man that experienced a seminal emission shall immerse himself in the mikveh. So what is Ezra adding? The Gemara answers, D'oraisa hu l'truma v'kotchin. From the Torah perspective, the balkeri needs to immerse himself for Truma, for the a Kohen who wants to eat Truma, that's the tithe given to a Kohanim, and the Torah insists that it be consumed in a state of purity. the kodshim, sacrificial foods, and also ihu, also who, that is, he came, Ezra came along, tikein afilu l'divrei Torah. Even for the study of Torah, if a person experienced, became a Baal Keri, so Ezra established that he shall immerse himself in a mikveh before the study of Torah. There's a Tosfos that appears here on the top. The first Tosfos on the page gets involved with the issue of, we'll say, practical law. Does this takana, is this takana binding upon us? A number of the other points that we saw Ezra establish, in fact, are binding, are actual. But this particular one, Tosfos elaborates on the issue of its applicability on an actual practical halacha lemaisa level. We're not going to go through the Tosfos, but we recommend looking into it. And as we mentioned in our introduction, here we have another list, and on the side of the under our topic heading, the Nosei Asara Dvarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim, 10 points said that are relevant to Yerushalayim, relevant and unique to Yerushalayim. The Gemara Asara Dvarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim. Number one, I should point out, and this is already the third list of 10 items that we've encountered since we started with the 10 enactments of Yoshua, the 10 enactments of Ezra, and now these 10 characters of Yerushalayim. As you go through the Gemara text, you'll see along the side again a numbering scheme highlighting the Gemara's addressing each one of these. So I should say that as far as the explanation of each point, let us wait for the Gemara to deal with it. So here we read the list. Asar Dvarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim, number one, Ein Habayis Cholut Ba. This deals with the topic of what we call Bote Ore Choma. In the Torah, in the Sefer Vayikra, toward the end of Sefer Vayikra, the Torah describes the sales of houses in walled cities. Those sales allow the original owner to force a buyback if he should so desire. He can force the purchaser, if it's within a year of his purchase, he can force the purchaser to sell him back the house. If not, if a year goes by and the original buyer, the original seller, has not insisted on the return of his house, in exchange, of course, for the return of the money, he can no longer force the resale. That situation of, we'll say, losing out on your house is called cholut. It's become a permanent sale. Not so with regard to the sale of houses in Jerusalem. Even though Jerusalem was a walled city, it's one of the Orei Choma, the restriction upon the seller in enabling him to redeem his house, to buy back his house, that restriction does not apply. So that's number one. That Ein HaBayis Cholut Bo, a house sale doesn't become permanent when it comes to Jerusalem. Number two, V'eino Mevio Eglo Arufa. The Eglo Arufa is the ceremony involving the breaking of the neck of a calf in the event that a murder victim is found out between two cities. The closer of the two cities bring an Eglo Arufa to a particular location, an uncultivated area of land between those two cities, and its neck is broken as a form of also interim atonement for the crime of the murder. Number three, V'eino, and I should say, so if Jerusalem happens to be the closer of those two cities in the event that a murder victim is found between Jerusalem and another community, and Jerusalem is the is the closer of the two. So Jerusalem is not going to bring, is not going to bring the Egla Rufa. The source for these, as we said, will be featured in the Gemara itself. Number three, Vieno Nasis Ir Hanidachas. Ir Hanidachas is a city in which the population fell victim to idolatry. And the Torah mentions that in a situation like that, so the violators are put to death, and all of the property is gathered together and burnt, and it's prohibited to benefit from it. If a situation where the population of Jerusalem, let us say, heaven forbid, became idolatrous, so the procedure of Ir HaNidachas that we just described would not be enacted, would not take hold. Vieno, number four, Vieno Metame Benegoyim. Negoyim is a reference to the realm of Tzoras. Here we're talking about Nige Botim. That's where the Torah describes this in Parshas Metzora, in Vayikra, where a discoloration develops on the walls of a particular house, and the Kohen comes and views it and establishes that it is a Nega. That Parsha of Nige Botim does not apply to Jerusalem. V'ein motzien bo zizim u'gzistrois. This has to do with construction. There are to be no extended porches, balconies that extend over streets and roads. Those are and other types of protrusions shall not be when it comes to Jerusalem construction. Number six, v'ein oisin bo ashposus. There shall be no open garbage heaps. Number seven, v'ein oisin bo kivshoinos. There shall be no furnaces. Furnaces that were used for, Rashi says, mifrus osid l'kederos. My impression is that's for the for the production of clay pots that would be fired up in a kiln, in a furnace. That is not to be done in Jerusalem. V'ein oisin bo ginois upardesis. There shall be no gardens and vineyards in Jerusalem. Chutz miginois vrodin shemimois neviim horishon, with the exception of gardens in which vrodim were cultivated. The vrodim is a plant that was used as part of the Beis HaMikdash incense offering, the Ketores. So that was needed for the Beis HaMikdash, hence that type of garden would be allowed, but other types of gardens and orchards not so. And the source relates that the Ginos Vrodin were there from the early times of the prophets. The Ein Megadlin Bo Tarnagolim, no raising of chickens. The Ein Malinin Bo Esames, and if a person passed away in Jerusalem, the burial was to take place that day, not leave it over. Malinin from the word lon or lino means to stay overnight, but not so, but there should be a same day burial. Now we go over the points. Ein abayis cholut ba. Dichtiv, we mentioned before the issue of sales of houses in walled cities. The sale in a Jerusalem of a Jerusalem house would not be permanent. Dichtiv v'kom habayis asher be'ir asher loy choymo litzmisus lakina oisoy l'doyroisav. That is the pasuk that mentions the permanence of a sale in a walled city for one who buys it for generations. This pasuk serves as a source let's just read just another couple words. V'kosovar, this source that says the house sales in Jerusalem are not permanent, because of lo nishalko Yerushalayim lishvatim, Jerusalem was not part of the national land distribution of Eretz Yisrael amongst the different tribes, so that you don't have in Jerusalem anyone that we would describe as an owner of property. And hence the pasuk that describes the house sales doesn't have relevance to Jerusalem, because in the pasuk we have a description of someone buying something that will then subsequently bequeath it to his subsequent generations, which is indicative of inheritance. But Jerusalem was not divided amongst the tribes to be a source of inheritance. So that as we said, the pasuk then doesn't apply to Jerusalem. V'eino mevio eglo arufa, dechtiv, ki motzei cholol ba'adama asher Hashem elokecha noisein lechol l'rishta, v'yushalayim loy nischalko l'shvotim. The pasuk describes the finding of a cholol, of a murder victim, in the land that God has given you for rishta. L'rishta means for inheritance purposes, but Jerusalem was not divided amongst the tribes for inheritance purposes. As far as how did someone become an owner of property in Jerusalem, etc., that's something that has to be looked into. But what we can certainly say is that an initial receipt of a portion of land in Jerusalem dating back to the original distribution of land in the time of Yeshua, that did not happen. This issue, by the way, is something that you find mentioned throughout the Shas. You might find other opinions on this topic, but we're dealing with our Gemara at hand. You might have noticed a diamond marking on the side of the Gemara under our Mivneh, under our structural note. We indicate these are four halachas, dalet halachas harishonis hamavusasas al hadeas Yerushalayim lo nischalko lishvatim. We find that the first four halachas in this list have this point in common, that as a result, they result from the fact that Jerusalem was not divided amongst the tribes as a particular tribe's possession. The number three, Ve'eno Naaseis Ir Hanidachas Dichtiv, it doesn't become a city of idolatry. Dichtiv Orecha. Orecha means your cities, where you have possession of it as a result of receiving it as your property, as your inheritance. But Yerushalayim lo nischalko lishvatim. Yerushalayim, however, was not divided amongst the tribes. V'eino mitama b'negoyim. And it's not subject to house defilement through tzoras. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, V'nasati negat tzoras b'veis eretz achuzaschem. The pasuk describes the affliction of tzoras in houses that are in the land of your achuzaschem, of your inheritance. Yerushalayim lo nischalko lishvatim. V'ein motzien bo gzizin uzashros. In house construction, no protrusions and balconies. Why not? So we have two reasons. Mipnei oyel atuma, umishum shadlo litzku oyle regalim. The first has to do with oyel atuma, the overshadowing caused by a balcony extending over a road. Just imagine that under that balcony would be an olive quantity, a kezayis min ames, of, say, corpse material, corpse flesh. People walking under that balcony, that under which there already was corpse flesh, they would become tamei. They wouldn't necessarily be aware of it until it's too late. So that all the people that were on their way to the Beis HaMikdash or going to participate in the eating of sacrifices, all kinds of situations that demand maintenance of purity, the overhanging would interfere, would threaten that. So we preempt that by saying all building construction in Jerusalem shall be without these various protrusions, extensions over the public thoroughfare. And a second reason is that the lalitziku, mishum de lalitziku, lalitziku means be injured by these protrusions, the ole regolim, people coming, which the thrice year pilgrims coming to Yerushalayim to the Beis Hamikdash, if these overhangings or protrusions were at, let's say, person height, people would bang into it and hurt themselves. So as to prevent the any mass injury, don't have these protrusions in the first place. V'ein oisin bo hashposes, not to have garbage heaps, mishum shkotzim. Garbage heaps attract all kinds of creepy, crawling creatures, and they're attracted to the garbage, and if they happen to die there, these shrutzim, they cause defilement. And once again, in Jerusalem, there was consumption of sacrificial meat and the need for maintenance of purity. So we want to try to decrease the possibility of any tumah prolification. V'ein oisin ba kivshonos, no furnaces. Mishum kutra, literally because of the smoke. Rashi says, "Oshon shemashkir es achaymu gnaihu." Very interesting, ecologically sensitive point, and that the smoke will blacken the walls of Jerusalem, and it's unpleasant. It creates ugliness. V'ein oisin ba ginos upardesin, the objection to having gardens and orchards, mishum sircha. Rashi says sirachon. Sirachon is often associated with foulness, foul odor. Asovim roim agdelim shom v'zorkin b'chutz. In gardens and in orchards, you also have weeds that grow, and people who tend these will weed the garden, throw the weeds outside of the boundaries of that particular agricultural phenomenon, and they start to decay and cause a bad smell. And another point that Rashi makes is that gardens needed to be fertilized, and the fertilizer, the manure, creates a bad smell, and we don't want that in Jerusalem. V'ein megadlin bo tarnegolim mishum kotshim. This is a point we've mentioned in the past. Chickens peck away at garbage heaps. And we mentioned before, in garbage heaps, even though we don't have them in Jerusalem, but in the event that there may be a pile of garbage, maybe outside Jerusalem or in someone's private domain, the chicken pecking away will pick up these dead shrutzim and deposit them possibly on food that needs to have its purity maintained. And again, that was very common in Jerusalem. The ein malinin bo es hames, the objection to having a dead individual, a corpse, remain unburied beyond the day of death, gemara. That's a tradition. It's an oral tradition. There is no verse citation or reason given for that. The Mishnah mentioned on Daf Ayin Tesomet Beis, Ein Megadlin Chazirim B'chol Mokom, the prohibition of raising pigs all over. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading which reads, Maisa, an incident B'tkufas Beis Chashmonoi during the Hasmonean period, Shehelu Chazir LeMikdash, where a swine was raised into the Beis HaMikdash, or an attempt of raising a swine over the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, b'niseyon hashbis hakrovas hatomid, in an attempt to stop the offering of the daily public sacrifice, b'yisushal gazru shalo yilamed es b'no chochmas yivonis, and at that moment they also ruled that chochmas yivonis shall not be taught. So we have the origin of the swine raising prohibition, as well as a prohibition of teaching chokmas yivonis. Tonu rabbanan, kishitzoru beis hashmonoi ze al ze, hurkenes mi bifniv aristablus mi bachutz. An unfortunate period in Jewish history that, if I just might editorialize, is not unique to that period, but we've seen it over the generations, internal Jewish strife. And in this case, the Beis Hashmonai, the Hasmoneans, who gained fame because of the, we'll call the Hanukkah victory, a couple generations after that, there was divisiveness that developed in that family, who were the, we'll say, the ruling family. The family names were, they started with two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, and the families that came forth from them. Hyrcanus mibifni means Hyrcanus was in the inside, in the Beis HaMikdash, and they were, as mentioned, they were at strife with one another, fighting over who shall occupy the office of. If we call it the king of rulership, of governing. So Hyrcanus was Bifni. They had the upper hand at this time, featured in the story. So that they were inside, running the Beis HaMikdash. They were Kohanim. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Beis Hashmonai being the descendants of Kohanim. So Hyrcanus was inside, of Aristobulus mibachutz, and they were outside. V'chol yoim hoyu meshalshim lem b'kupa dinrim, and every day the Hyrcanus people that were inside lowered a box of dinrim, of coins, and the coins were lowered to the Aristobulus people outside in the attempt to buy animals for sacrificial purposes that were then hoisted over the wall into the Beis HaMikdash. Vayumalin lahem to meet him, and they would, in exchange for the coins, they would then provide the to meet him, the daily public sacrifice. There was a morning and afternoon offering. Hoyasham zokein echot shemaki b'chokhmas yivonis. There was an old man there that was familiar with chokhmas yivonis. Yivonis is often translated as the Greeks. What Chochmas Yevonis is, we'll see later, and it's a form of communication. So this man communicated using Chochmas Yevonis. Omar Lahem, and he said, Kozman She'oiskim Bavoida Einim Sar Biyadchem. He addressed the Aristobulus people, saying that as long as the sacrificial procedure continues, Ein nimsorim biyachem, they will not be given over into your hands. In other words, they will remain in control. You will not have a victory over them. Oh, so with that information, they said, "Oh, we want to take over." So lemachar shilshulu dinner mikupa. The next day, as happened every day, coins were lowered in the kupa, in the box. Vehelu lahem hazir. And instead of a sheep, which was the animal used for the daily sacrifice, they sent over a pig. Kevon shigil chatzi achoyma, when it reached half the wall height, noatziporna b'choyma, it wedged its hoofs into the wall. V'nizdazeh Eretz Yisrael arba meis parsa al arba meis parsa. And the land of Israel, Nizazeh, means it shook, it trembled. This is probably a figure of speech, but there were, if we translate it, it comes out that there were like earth tremors, and and it was an experienced movement over an area of 400 square parsa. Parsa is a land distance measure. One parsa has 4 mil in it, 4 kilometers. So you can see it's a large area. But as I said, it's probably to be taken as a figure of speech indicating describing something as a national calamity. At that time, they said, Orur, cursed be Ha'ish Shigado Chazirim that raises pigs, V'oru Ha'odom Shilamed as Benoi Chochmas Yivonis, and cursed be the man that teaches his son this form of communication called Chochmas Yivonis. V'al Oysa Shah Shoninu, regarding that period, that historical period, Maisa Shabo Imer Miginois Atsrifin Ushte Alechem Mibikas Ein Socher. The terms Ginas Srifim and Bikas Ein Socher are their place names. They're locations that are at some distance from Jerusalem. Originally, before this strife ensued, the meal offerings that were brought in the Beis HaMikdash, particularly the Omer and the Shtei Alechem, were brought from grains that were near Jerusalem, so that when they were brought to Jerusalem, they were fresh and not dried out. At this point in time, when there was the internal Jewish strife, there were enemies that were laying siege on Jerusalem. And in their siege on Jerusalem, they burnt all of the surrounding fields, so that there were no grains available for the sacrifices we just described. The source mentions the Omer and the Shtei Alechem. The meal offering, the Omer, is brought on the 16th of Nisan. It's a barley offering. And the Shtei Alechem are 2 loaves that were brought from wheat on the Shavuos holiday. So, as a result of the siege laid on Jerusalem, the only available grain fields were at some distance. One was located in Ginas Srifim, the other in Bikas Ein Socher. The Gemara asks, V'chochmas Yevonis mi Asira? Is this form of communication prohibited? V'hatanya? Omar Rebbe. There is an issue of what language to choose in different places. So Rebbe says, Be'eretz Yisrael, we continue at the top of Daf Pei Gimel. Loshon Sursi Lama. At the time of Rebbe, they were communicating in a language called Sursi. Why choose that language? Rebbe exclaimed, Oy Loshon HaKadosh, Oy Loshon Yevonis. Either Hebrew or Loshon Yevonis, Greek. These are considered more beautiful languages, more pleasant languages. V'yomar Rabbi Yossi, B'bovel, Loshon Arami Lama. Why choose the Arami tongue? Oy Loshon HaKadosh, Oy Loshon Parsi. Either Hebrew or Persian. The question, as you can see very clearly from this source, is that Rebbe was actually advocating the choice of Greek. How then can you say, cursed be the one that teaches his children Chochmas Yevonis? Amri, the Gemara answers, Loshon Yevoni Lechud, Chochmas Yevonis Lechud. There are 2 separate things here. You have Loshon Yevonis, the Greek language, that was pleasant. In fact, desirable. However, Chochmas Yevonis, that's something else. It's a form of communication. If I'm not mistaken, in other Gemaras, you can see a reference to certain types of hand gestures. It was something that needed to be studied and develop expertise in if you were to pursue it. That is what we was prohibited because of the incident that we saw in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara asks, though, we have a long question marking here. The Chochmas Yevonis Miasir, is Chochmas Yevonis really prohibited? V'lamar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rav Shmuel Gamliel. The following was said in the name of Rav Shmuel Gamliel, who was a descendant from the Nisim, from the leaders of the Jewish people. He was a Nosi. And it says in his name, quoting a pasuk in Echa, the Book of Lamentations, "Eini olulah lenafshi mikol b'nois irig." The pasuk, as we say, it's in the Book of Lamentations, and expresses something of a dirgeful nature. Elef yulodim hoyu b'veis abba. The pasuk, as we mentioned, is something where you see that the prophet is expressing remorse and a sense of bereavement. So Rav Shmuel Gamliel, using that pasuk as a backdrop, he says, "Elef yulodim hoyu beveis abo chomesh meus mehem lomdu Torah v'chomesh meus lomdu chochmas yevonis." In father's household there were 1,000 children. 500 studied Torah. 500 studied chochmas yevonis. V'lo nishtayim mehem elo ani kanu ben achi abo ba'asya. And there remain no more than two of us, me, myself over here, and my father's nephew, my father's brother's son, in a place called Asya. But what we do see is that in the house of the Nasi, certainly a reputable family, they studied Chochmas Yevonis. And this was certainly after the Hasmonean period. So how can you say that cursed be one who teaches Chochmas Yevonis when there were 500 children from the Beis HaNasi that studied that? Amri Shaini Beis Rav Gamliel Shayu Krivim L'Malchus Ufadisanya. The house of Rav Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel, was a Nasi. In the Gemara we just had, we featured Rav Shimon Gamliel, a son of Rav Gamliel. There's actually a chain of Rav Gamliels and Rav Shimon Gamliels. So the house of Rav Gamliel is different because they were Krivim L'Malchus. They were associated with the monarchy. They were in a occupied a leadership position. Uchidisanya. And we'll appreciate what that means in a moment by going through the following source. The following source deals with two practices. One has to do with the form of haircut, and the other having to do with Chochmas Yevonis. And the source begins, HaMisaper Kumi. Misaper is a very tricky word, because the root of that word, we're going to see very shortly, the word Lisaper can mean haircut, and it also means communication, like a sipur, to tell over a story. A sefer is a book. It's a form of communication. But in this case, HaMisaper Kumi has to do with a form of haircut where people would shave their hair from the front part of their head and allow it to grow in the back part of their head. HaMisaper Kumi Areza Midarki Amori. It's the way of the Amorites. It's an idolatrous practice, and it's forbidden. Avtumus Baruvin Hitirulo Lisaper Kumi, but this fellow Avtumus was permitted to cut his hair in that fashion, to have that form of, we'll say, hair style. Neshu Korov Lamachus, because he was close to the government. He had to interface with the government. And my impression is we're referring, of course, to Gentile governments, and the Gentiles happen to look like that, so as to not stand out, but to rather look to be able to mingle with them. It was important that he be allowed to have this otherwise prohibited form of haircut. I just occurred to me, just to emphasize that the haircut itself, we may have mentioned, was characteristic of idolatrous individuals, but not that it itself was a form of idolatry, otherwise that wouldn't be allowed. but was the way of the Gentiles who practiced idolatry. So he was allowed to have that haircut because of Korov Lamachus. Shelbeis Rama Gamliel Hitiru Lehem Lesaper, and here the same word, but meaning something totally different. Lesaper means to communicate. So the house of Gamliel was entitled to communicate B'chochmas Yevonis, Shekroivim Lamachus. The royalty of that time communicated in Chochmas Yevonis. So the Jewish governmental representatives that had to interface with the Gentile authorities, that was their means of communication. So in order to benefit the Jewish people, and that would be achieved by communication with the Malchus, with the governing bodies, these people from the house of Rav Gamliel had to learn and have expertise in Chochmas Yevonis, that form of communication. Lo yigadol adam es hakelev elam ken kosher b'shal shalois. We saw in our Mishnah that one is not allowed to raise dogs unless it is chained. Tanu rabbanan lo yigadol adam es hakelev elam ken kosher b'shal shalos. One is not allowed to raise a dog unless it's chained up. Avol megadolu beir hasmucho lasfar. It's maybe ironic, but the same letters appear as we saw already twice before. Here's a third meaning, just that the vowelization of this is different. That's why we've put it in our Gemara. A community that's near the border, the Israel border with the surrounding nations. There's more to say about the issue of border. You'll see in the next couple of lines of Gemara. But on an initial level of understanding, border communities were allowed to raise dogs. The kosher biyom matir b'layla, they would be tied up by day and left free to roam at night. They served as a form of protection. Border communities were most prone and susceptible to enemy infiltration. The dogs would help to serve as a means of defense, and therefore they had the allowance. Tanya, Rebbe Lezer, Hagadol Loimer, Hamegadol Klovim Kemegadol Chazirim. Rebbe Lezer Hagadol says that one who raises dogs is like one who raises swine. Lamai Nafgamina. What is his point? What is he trying to tell us? Lamekam Alei Baoror. That one who in fact does raise dogs is similar to those that raise pigs, in the sense that just like we saw earlier that those who raise pigs were subject to oror, to a curse, so Rebbe Lezer tells us, so too is one who raises dogs. And even though we knew before we read Rebbe Lezer HaGadol that one is not allowed to raise dogs, but he adds that one who does so is subjecting himself to oror, to a curse, similar to those who raise the swine. You might note that we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text indicating pei beis omid beis. That is where the Gemara mentioned the curse upon those that raise the swine. That, of course, you find at the lower part, four lines from the bottom of Pei Beis Omid Beis. Omer of Yosef, Bar Minyumi, Omer of Nachman, Bovel, Kira Smucha Lesfar Domi. Before we mention the issue of the border of Eretz Yisrael, here you see expanding that idea to Bovel. Babylonia was like a city near the border. Tirgum and Naharda, not all of Babylonia, but the Rav Yosef was making reference to a city in Bavel. Naharda, that was a city that had a large Jewish population, and it was near the border, and as a means of protection, so they had the leniency regarding the raising of dogs. I should mention the reference that we've been making to Eretz Yisrael as being the prototype for this say, allowance when it comes to borders. You can see this in the Rashi. Let's continue in the Gemara. We continue with the issue of dogs and the problem behind them. Dorish, this point, by the way, lasts a couple of lines. We've indicated it thusly. Dorish Rav Dostoy de Minbiri, Rav Dostoy is his name, Minbiri from a place called Biri, quotes a pasuk that says, V'nucha yoimar shuvah Hashem rivavos alfei Yisrael. The word rivavos, a rivava, is 20,000. And alfei is in the, it means thousands, the minimum of thousands is 2,000. That's the minimum of the word thousand in the plural. This pasuk teaches us, L'lam d'chosh ein shechina shira al Yisrael pavlos mishnei alofim u'shnei revovis. The divine presence doesn't settle upon a mass of Jews any less, if they're any less, if they are any less than 22,000. The Bach in Ois Aleph adds a few words, which we'll read together. Harei shoy Yisrael shnei alafim u'shnei revavos choser echad. Imagine that the Jewish community had 21,999 people. That's 22,000 choser achas, minus one. And there was a pregnant woman amongst them, having a as yet unborn, that upon his birth would be the completion of the 22,000 required for having divine presence. V'novach bo kelev v'pila, and a dog barked, frightened her, v'pila means, and caused her to miscarry. So the dog is the cause of the departure of the divine presence from Israel. The point, I think, is well taken, how you can see the barking of a dog could be responsible for such a an unfortunate situation. A story, Hahi Itza, it was a pregnant woman, the Ola, the Meifa Bu Besa, that entered a house. The Meifa means to bake. We've seen this in earlier in the Masechta, if I'm not mistaken, where there was a different issue that was dealt with over there, where a woman entered a courtyard with her dough, and the animal of the owner of that courtyard ate the dough and took sick. But this is unrelated, other than the fact it's another example of a woman entering a courtyard to, in this case, she's entering a house where there was an oven that was made available to others. So she wanted to bake in that house. Novach bo kalbo, and the homeowner's dog barked. And the woman became frightened. Omar lo amore, the owner said, Lo tistafi mine, don't be afraid of him, of the dog, shkuli nive. I've removed its canines, these are the teeth that the dog bites with. Omrole, the woman says, shkili tivusech v'shadya achizri. You can take your favor and throw it on the thorns. In other words, you're not comforting me. Kvar nod volad, the child that I was carrying, meaning the baby with which I was pregnant, I felt it die, meaning it literally, nod volad means the child moved. It moved out of its place in her womb. She understanding that because of the fright she just experienced, that caused her to miscarry. So the words of comfort, of security offered by the owner were too late, so to speak. The dog caused the unfortunate fright. Ein porsin nishvin liyonim, elo im kein rochik min ayishuv shloishim ris. The Mishnah taught that nets to catch yoinim, birds, are not to be spread out unless you are 30 ris, 4 kilometers, 4 mil, from the closest or neighboring community. So make sure that your 30 ris, it's a ris is a, as we just mentioned, it's a land distance measure, 7.5 ris per mil. So make sure that your 30 ris from any community before you set up your nets for catching birds. Within that 30 ris distance, you might be catching birds owned by members of that community. Beyond that, you'd be catching unowned wild birds. The Gemara asks, "So me asli kuli hai? Do birds fly that? Do birds go that far?" Va'atnan marchikin as a shovach minoir chamishim amo. If you have a bird coop, a shovach, a bird coop, you must distance it 50 amos. 50 amos is much. It's 25 meters approximately from the city, so that your birds shall be kept at a distance of 50 amas from the city. What's the point here? If you keep them 50 amas from the city, so they won't consume grains belonging to the townsfolk. Your birds won't steal food. Well, what do you see from here? That birds don't travel more than 50 amas. The Gemara resolves, Omar Abaye, Meshad Shaiti Tuva, birds fly much more. However, Kresayu b'chamishim amo malya. Kresayu, literally their stomachs, their food consumption, they do so within an area of, within a distance of 50 amas. Rashi, toward the lower part of the Rashi commentary, Kresayu b'chamishim malya, b'ma shehen malakto yisu menakus b'karka. That which they collect and peck away at the ground, Malayan b'chamishin amo, they'll fill themselves up within 50 amas. Hilkoch legabi achilas tvus ir ein lochush bios. You don't have to worry about distancing them any more than 50 amas. You can rest assured that birds within 50 amas will find the food necessary to satisfy them. However, as far as flying is concerned, they'll fly at greater distances. The Gemara asks, "Umeishin shloishim ris v'sulo, only 30 ris v'atanya." We have a brisa that says, "Beyishuv, if you're within a settled area, afilu mea mil lo yifros, even at a distance of 100 mil." You shall not set up nets to catch birds. What we just did is we offered a literal translation, but the purpose on the question level is to see that even within 100 mil, you're not allowed to set up nets. Rav Yosef Omar, B'yishuv Kromim, what was described here is you have to imagine a community, a city, that's a yishuv, and the reference in the source to yishuv is a reference to vineyards, kromim. If you have a series of vineyards, one following the other, a bird will start from its starting point where it lives. It's an owned bird. People own the birds at what's called starting point. And then there's a series of vineyards that extend even for a distance of mea mil, 100 kilometers of vineyards. And you're at the other end. You are not allowed to set up nets. Why not? Because the birds from the starting point, where we said they were owned by owners, will travel using, as we'll call, resting points or what have you, for that great distance because of the convenience of for the birds of having the krumim, the vineyards along the way. So there is the danger of your catching own birds, therefore not to set up nets. But that's only because you have this continuum of vineyards. But if, let us say, there's a community, and then there's open area, unsettled, uncultivated land. So four meal, or so we said 30 ris would be a sufficient distancing to ensure that you're not catching owned birds, owned by others. Rabba Omar B'Yishuv Shovachin. The same idea, however, instead of speaking about vineyards, you have a continuum of bird coops. The Gemara asks, V'tepuk lei mishum shovchin gufayu. Why do you speak about yishuv, a settled area, and you have to distance yourself? You wouldn't be able to rely even on a distance of 100 mil. When, why make reference to the settled area? What about the next bird coop itself? If you're going to set up your nets near them, you're going to be catching other people's birds. The Gemara answers, the reference to bird coops here is Iboy Esema B'Dovei Kichavim, Iboy Esema B'Dehefker, Iboy Esema B'Didei. Three answers as to why not to be concerned with the bird coop itself, the series of bird coops featured here that stood between you and the community, because these were bird coops owned by idol worshippers, and we're not so concerned about the, we'll say, protection and welfare of birds owned by idolatrous individuals. So that the need for distancing because you're near a bird coop per se wouldn't be the point of concern. But the community that is there on the other side of the series of bird coops, that already is a problem. And therefore, if you have a continuum of bird coops following that city, you have the restriction we mentioned before. Another reason why the bird coops don't pose a problem is B'dehefker, they're unowned. They're abandoned bird coops. So the birds that are in those bird coops are not something that would be of any concern. And V'boy Seima B'didei, all of the bird coops that we just mentioned were owned by the individual setting up the nets. They were his own birds. So all those that were within 100 mil were his own birds. So they weren't really the source of concern. The concern was only those birds from the community that would come via the bird coops continuing their flight at a great distance. As you can see, with the help of the Almighty, we have completed the seventh perek of Bava Kama. And Mirtz Hashem, and our next year, we'll start on Pei Gimel Amud Beis, the eighth perek. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.